You are listening to WPVM LP 103.7 in Asheville, North Carolina. And globally at WPVMFM.org.
Well, howdy, buckaroos and buckarettes.
This is WPVM 103.7 FM in Asheville, North Carolina. Hello and welcome to A Better World on WPVM. My name is McNair Ezard and I'm your host for today's show. Each week on A Better World, we take an in-depth look at the people and organizations locally, nationally, and internationally who are working to create a world that works for everyone. And our show today is about Special Olympics. And we are dedicating today's show to a friend of ours, Patrick John Dougherty from the Atlanta, Georgia area, who was a Special Olympian. Patrick lived with Down syndrome, and he recently passed from this life at the age of 61. Patrick participated year-round in Special Olympics for 50 years, from the fall of 1975 to the spring of 2025. He learned a variety of skills and competed in a wide range of sports over the years in Montana and Georgia. From basketball, track and field, snowshoeing, barrel racing, to powerlifting and bowling. In 1999, Patrick qualified for the World Games in powerlifting when the games were held in Raleigh, North Carolina. And in 2001, he competed in the Alaska World Games in snowshoe. And Patrick medaled in both games. And our guest today is Katie McGee. She's the Senior Director of Marketing and Communications for Special Olympics North Carolina. And prior to joining the inclusion movement in North Carolina, Katie interned with Special Olympics Virginia as a college student during her time at Longwood University. She has represented Special Olympics North Carolina at the 2018 and 2022 Special Olympics USA Games, as well as on the Special Olympics USA delegation for the Special Olympics World Games in Berlin in 2023 and the Special Olympics World Games in Turin in 2025. Katie McGee, welcome to A Better World.
Hello, it's nice to be here.
I've been looking forward to doing this show. I've known about the Special Olympics for a long time. Certainly don't know as much about it as you do, so I appreciate you coming on the show to talk about this special organization. But before we get into the specifics about the Special Olympics, can you tell us more about yourself and your background?
Absolutely. So as you said, I interned with Special Olympics Virginia as a college student. And I fell in love with the organization. I fell in love with the movement. And not long after I graduated college in 2016, I got a job at Special Olympics North Carolina, and I've been here ever since. I have been involved with Special Olympics on the grassroots local level, and then, as you said, all the way up to World Games. So I've gotten to see a lot of different aspects of the organization.
What was it that initially drew you to Special Olympics in college when you interned?
So when I was in college, I knew I wanted to work for a nonprofit. I wanted to work in nonprofit communications. And I saw a posting for a Special Olympics internship, and I thought that would be the perfect fit for me. I'll be honest, I didn't have a lot of experience with people with intellectual disabilities prior to it. And I think that does a disservice to the youth of our country and of the universe to not be involved with Special Olympics or with people with intellectual disabilities prior to opportunities like that. But once I got involved, it felt so natural to me. It felt like the perfect fit. So I wanted to stay involved however I could.
What was it about working in the nonprofit sector that drew your interest?
I think a lot of people in the nonprofit world really want to help people. I think that's why anybody gets into the nonprofit sector. And I think that's true for me as well. And I have really enjoyed every minute of getting to ingratiate myself with these athletes and really get to know them. And it's kept me around for 10 years at this point, getting to meet people that I wouldn't get to meet every day. I think in a lot of, there's nothing wrong with the corporate world, but I think for me, I wouldn't get to meet the people that I love to meet so much in that kind of a setting.
Have you developed some good friendships over the years with the athletes?
I really have. I consider those friendships really special to me. I am what we call a speech coach for Global Messengers, which we can talk about later on. But for those Global Messengers, I've really developed friendships and special relationships with those athletes, and in ways mentoring them, but also in ways they're, you know, teaching me as well.
What is a speech coach? I haven't heard that in terms of Special Olympics.
We have global messengers who are trained to give speeches and speak on behalf of the organization. And a speech coach is someone who helps them, whether it's with writing their speech or making sure they have transportation to their speeches, just supporting that global messenger along the way.
Tell me more, in addition to being speech coach, about your role at Special Olympics.
Yeah, so as the Senior Director of Marketing and Communications, I am dealing a lot with the, I guess you could say, electronic world. I am involved a lot on the back end of things, and I would say that for a lot of people, they might not get the chance to be face-to-face with a lot of athletes through that, but we have a goal to include athletes wherever we can. So I'm constantly getting to work with athletes through my role as a speech coach, but also through my role on staff, whether it's involving them with giving interviews, speaking on behalf of the organization, whether they're helping us with social media. They're always involved with that. So I do a lot of work with our website, with our email marketing, with our social media, with our public relations. That's really what I'm touching and doing every single day.
Mm-hmm. Do you see yourself staying with Special Olympics?
I do.
Gives you a sense of purpose?
I do see myself staying with Special Olympics. I have been involved for 10 years now. And it has been the better part of my day every day. So even days, you know, jobs can be hard, but even days when things are a little rough or things aren't going well, the minute I step out at a competition and get to hang out with the athletes, it really does just make everything a lot better. And it just really is a great place to work.
So talk to me about the mission of Special Olympics.
Yeah, so our mission is to provide year-round sports training and competition for people with intellectual disabilities. That includes children and adults.
And this idea of inclusion and empowerment, is that an important component of Special Olympics?
I would say that those two are prime components of Special Olympics. We want to be an organization that is led by athletes, that is taking what our athletes want and think into account. So empowering them to give their opinions and to practice new things, to try new things, is always at the forefront of our movement.
And what about I've kind of become clued in on it over the past few years, but I didn't know a lot about the differences between Special Olympics and Paralympics.
Yes, they are different. Paralympics take place every 4 years, typically within the same year as the Five Ring Olympics. So the Paralympics has athletes who have physical disabilities. Maybe they use a wheelchair, maybe they have a leg amputated, that kind of a thing. But Special Olympics is for people with intellectual disabilities. Now, you can have physical disabilities as well, but they have to have a diagnosed intellectual disability too. So you can use a wheelchair and have autism and compete in Special Olympics. But if you just use a wheelchair, then you would be competing in Paralympics.
And when you say intellectual disabilities, what sort of things are you looking at?
So autism, Down syndrome, fetal alcohol syndrome, there's a myriad of intellectual disabilities that are a part of the intellectual and developmental disability community. So it really could be a lot of different things that just needs to be diagnosed by a doctor.
And the difference between the competition levels between Paralympics and Special Olympics?
I'm not entirely familiar with the Paralympics competition levels, but I imagine that they're advancing through, you know, local, regional, all the way up to international. And we're similar to that. We have local competitions at the grassroots level. In North Carolina, we're split up by county, and every county has their own local program. And so our athletes are able to compete at the local level. And then from there, they're able to go to regional events. They're able to go to state level events. And then if they win a gold medal at a state level event in a qualifying year for USA Games or World Games, they're put into a pot, and the gold medal, the people are selected from there. And then that's how we have advancement to USA Games or to World Games.
So even at the local level and regional level, people can still compete even if they may not be at the top of their particular sport?
Yes, we are for all ability levels. We have divisions in Special Olympics. It's a little different from, I would assume, Paralympics or even the Five Ring Olympics. Our divisions are first through eighth place, and they're based on three different factors: gender, age, and ability level. But the most important is ability level. So we would never put someone who can run a 5-minute mile with someone in a division who runs a 15-minute mile. They're at different ability levels. We wouldn't put someone who just started swimming last year and is needing to use a kickboard or something like that. We would never put them with someone who can do the backstroke faster than anybody we know, right? So there are different ability levels, and we make sure that everybody has a chance to compete and shine on the competition field and floor.
So what kind of sporting events do people participate in Special Olympics?
So in North Carolina, we have, again, local competitions, and we are a year-round sports organization. So we're having competitions 365 or training 365 days of the year. So they could be competing at the local level or at the state level. We have our summer games is our largest state level event. We have fall tournament. We have an equestrian tournament and a cheerleading tournament and a winter games. And so all of those state level events are, again, throughout the year. So we have 20 sports here in North Carolina, and athletes can choose what sports they want to take part in. And from there, they can advance through local to state level events.
And when do the regional and national and international competitions take place?
Special Olympics North America holds regional events throughout the year. They have like a tennis championship in Hilton Head, South Carolina. That's really, really awesome. So they're hosting those kind of events all year round. The USA Games are every 4 years, and the next USA Games are coming up in 2026, and they'll be held in Minnesota. So we'll be taking a team of about 50 athletes and unified partners to Minnesota to compete at USA Games. And then the World Games alternate. So they're every 2 years, but they alternate between summer and winter. So summer's every 4 years, winter's every 4 years, but World Games in general is alternating every 2 years.
So is there like an international Olympic committee like there is for the Five Ring Olympics that chooses a particular country where the international competition might be held?
Special Olympics International does have committees that oversee that process. I am not 100% sure what the makeup of that committee is on an international level, but yes, they do have committees that work to secure the next locations for us.
Take a break here. When we come back, I'd like to ask you about the Special Olympics origin story. And if you just joined us, you're listening to a conversation with Katie McGee. She's the Senior Director of Marketing and Communications with Special Olympics North Carolina. And you're listening to A Better World at 103.7 WPVM. And we're streaming live at WPVMFM.org.
Supposed to be. All my prayers, they glow like northern lights. And I'll fight for every single one. I'm not gonna beg you for tomorrow. Some are born to lead and never fall.
Okay, that song is right where I'm supposed to be. That was the anthem at the Special Olympics World Games in Abu Dhabi in 2019. And the artists are Ryan Tedder, Luis Fonsi, and other musicians.
Thank you. Tonight, in this great stadium, a new legend is born. You athletes are the heroes of that legend. Here, where crowds once cheered for Johnny Lujak and George Gipp, for Joe Theismann and Rocky Blyer, tonight they cheer for you. You are the stars, and the world is watching you. By your presence, you send a message to every village, every city, every nation. A message of hope, a message of victory. The right to play on any playing field, you have earned it. The right to study in any school, you have earned it. The right to hold a job, you have earned it. The right to be anyone's neighbor, you have earned it. The days of separation and segregation are over.
That's Eunice Kennedy Shriver speaking at the opening ceremonies at the 1987 Special Olympics World Summer Games in South Bend, Indiana. More than 4,000 athletes with intellectual disabilities from more than 70 countries took part in the games. And today our guest on A Better World is Katie McGee, Senior Director of Marketing and Communications with Special Olympics North Carolina. So tell us about the origin story for Special Olympics.
Eunice Kennedy Shriver is our founder. She is, as many people may know, but some people may not know, she is the sister of John F. Kennedy, who was our president. The Kennedy family is so renowned in our history, and they've done so many wonderful things for our country. And I think that Eunice Kennedy Shriver saw a need for people with intellectual disabilities and decided that this was something she was going to take on. They did have a sister named Rosemary Kennedy who was born with an intellectual disability. And back in those days, people with intellectual disabilities were institutionalized. They didn't get to spend the time with the families that they would now. They weren't in the home the way that they are now. So we've come a really long way, which is so wonderful. Back then, they found that they were able to understand Rosemary and connect with her on another level through sport. And that's kind of the inspiration for Special Olympics. They started hosting a camp called Camp Shriver in the back of Eunice Kennedy Shriver and Sergeant Shriver's their backyard. And that's kind of where it started. They saw that it really getting people with intellectual disabilities involved with sports and recreational activities did wonders for their social skills and learning skills in general. And so that started the movement. They hosted the very first games in Chicago on Soldier Field, where the Bears still play today, in 1968. We actually just had our 57th anniversary on July 20th. And we, as North Carolinians, we sent about six North Carolina athletes to those first games. We've been part of it from the beginning, and we're very proud of that fact. And once the delegation from North Carolina came back from those games, they set to work and they decided we're going to bring this to North Carolina. And 2 years later, in 1970, we were chartered and we're hosting our first games in North Carolina. So we're very proud to be a part of it from the beginning and to see how far this movement has grown.
Does every state have a Special Olympics going on, or is North Carolina, I guess I should say, are the other programs around the country as robust as the one in North Carolina seems to be?
Every state does have their own program. Not every state is as robust as North Carolina, but every state does have resources and support to bring in more athletes. Now, North Carolina, we have nearly 53,000 Special Olympics athletes and unified partners, which are people without intellectual disabilities that play with people with intellectual disabilities on the field of play. So we are actually one of the largest programs in the world, which is crazy to think about, that we have that many athletes compared to actual countries that have programs. But we owe a lot of that to those 1999 World Games that were held in Raleigh. It really brought a lot of athletes into our movement here locally.
So you've been to the USA and World Games. Tell me, describe what that's like to attend, what it was like for you.
It's a life-altering experience, to be completely honest. USA Games is, you're with your North Carolina delegation or whatever your state is, and you're getting to see them compete on a national stage and take it up a notch and get to that next level. It's really inspiring to see at that level. And then World Games just adds another component to it, because I was a part of Special Olympics USA, the delegation. So being with athletes from all across the country coming together and getting to see them interact with, make friends with people from across the globe is another level of excitement. It really changes your perspective on things. And it's an exhausting experience, but it is one I wouldn't trade for the world.
So when you say it changes your perspective on things, what do you mean by that?
I think we have come so far here in the United States with people with intellectual disabilities that North Carolina here, we have so many athletes involved. Across the United States, we have so many athletes involved. But the other countries perhaps don't have as big of programs or as many resources, but they're still coming out and competing. They're still bringing their athletes to World Games and giving it their all, and seeing what you're able to do, and also seeing who these athletes are able to make friends with, despite the fact that they aren't speaking the same language. It's really inspiring to see. And I think you can apply it to your own life and think, if I could reach across the aisle that way, if I could just put things aside and talk to somebody that way, the way that people are at a World Games, then, life might be a little bit better.
Have you known, do the people that go to the World Games, do some of these friendships that form, do they become like friends and stay in communication with each other?
Absolutely. Yeah, I've seen athletes, especially from Berlin in 2023, I'm still in contact with a lot of the athletes that were on this Special Olympics USA delegation with me from all across the country, and they're still friends with each other, and they've made friends with other athletes from other countries, and they're all Facebook friends, and they're texting, and they're getting to speak with each other, so they're putting in the work to maintain those relationships for sure.
Are there ever examples of where an athlete may have the ability to participate at the national or international level, but maybe they don't have the financial resources to do so? Is there any sort of assistance available to them?
Special Olympics never asks our athletes to pay a fee to participate. So we do ask that our athletes try to fundraise, but we will never deny an athlete the experience to go to a national or international games because they weren't able to fundraise the full amount. We will make sure that they get there.
And when they go to the national or international games, who goes with them? Are there just people from Special Olympics? Do family or friends go?
So to international or national games, they are a part of a delegation, whether it's their state delegation or the USA delegation. So they are traveling with the delegation to those games, and friends and family are able to come along. They're not allowed to be a part of the delegation, but they're able to come and cheer on their loved one that's participating.
So talk about how an athlete or potential athlete might start getting involved in Special Olympics.
We have our website, sonc.net, and they are able to go on there and go to become an athlete and fill out. We've got an athlete registration form that they fill out, return to us, and then they can start getting involved locally. We would refer them to their local coordinator, is what we call it, the person in charge of the county programs, the local programs. We would refer them to their local coordinator, and from there, they're able to choose what sports they want to participate in and start attending practices.
And do people start at all ages?
So Special Olympics, you have to be 8 years old or older to participate, but we do have a foundational program called Young Athletes that is for people that are ages 2 to 7 years old. And that is a unified program, which means it's for people with and without intellectual disabilities. So like siblings could participate together. And it explores the fundamentals of like kicking and throwing and those kind of things that then prepares them to go into sports training when they're 8 years old.
What's the youngest person you've known that's actually competed and the oldest person?
So I know a lot of 8-year-olds that actually compete. We've had many 8-year-olds come get involved and then actually come to our state level summer games. So yeah, they're welcome to come as early as 8 years old. They just have to do the training, require training in order to come compete. And then the oldest, upwards of 80, they can be as old as they'd like. They can compete for as long as they'd like. When I was an intern at Special Olympics Virginia, there was a World Games happening in Los Angeles, and the Special Olympics Virginia team that went to that had a bocce player who was in her 80s, and she did fantastic. And I think she won a gold medal that year. So yeah, you can be as old as you like, keep competing until you're ready to stop.
I'm doing some research for the show. I came across information that talked about potential disadvantages for participation in Special Olympics. I don't know how real they are or not, but I thought I'd ask you about them. And it talked about such things as, you know, the dominant role of coaches can have a negative effect on athletes, or the potential for paternalism or mental health challenges that I guess anybody would come under, you know, the stress of training and competition that could lead to possible mental health issues like anxiety or burnout. Can you talk about this area and how does Special Olympics go about addressing these and other possible disadvantages?
Sure. I think those factors are prevalent in any kind of sports activity, not just Special Olympics, but I will say that Special Olympics International has done studies to show that Special Olympics helps with athletes' mental health. And it's brought them a long way. We have Healthy Athletes, which is a health initiative through Special Olympics that has different disciplines, and Strong Minds is one of those that addresses athlete mental health and making sure that we're reaching athletes and helping them work on coping mechanisms and training them to identify when they need maybe a break or something like that. In terms of coaches, we do a lot of coach trainings. So I think that takes us a long way to make sure that our coaches are doing what they need to do to make sure that they're, like we said, empowering our athletes and not overbearing on them.
I would imagine there are benefits not just for the athletes who participated in Special Olympics, but also for their families and close friends. Any idea kind of to be able to talk about that?
Sure. The families that we know through Special Olympics North Carolina are involved with their athletes, but then we also see families who get involved as volunteers. So, for example, we have a family named the Dellingers, and they've been involved for, the parents have been involved for decades. And they, as soon as they had children, they brought their kids into the movement, and now their kids are grown and are still very regular volunteers, longtime volunteers. So there's a lot of aspects to our organization that is family friendly, and definitely something that can go with you into stages of life, whether you're having kids and you want them to get involved in some way or another, that there are opportunities for that. And families of athletes, you know, they can be coaches, they can be volunteers. And a lot of times we find that families want to be involved, siblings alongside their brother or sister, they want to be in the movement as a part of it and getting to experience it with them.
Are there particular sports that you especially like watching in Special Olympics?
Oh, I love gymnastics. I think that is so fun to watch. I also really enjoy powerlifting, which I never thought that I would, but it is, it's really impressive. The weight that these powerlifters can move is incredibly impressive. So those two are two of my favorites for sure.
You're listening to A Better World at 103.7 WPVM in Asheville, North Carolina. And today we are talking to Katie McGee. She's the Senior Director of Marketing and Communication for Special Olympics North Carolina. Katie has also represented Special Olympics North Carolina at the 2018 and 2022 Special Olympics USA Games. And we'll return with Katie in just a few minutes after this break.
Sunshine on my shoulders makes me happy. Sunshine in my eyes can make me cry. Sunshine on the water looks so lovely. Sunshine almost always makes me high. If I had a day that I could give you, I'd give to you a day just like today. And if I had a song that I could sing for you, I'd sing a song to make you feel this way. Sunshine on my shoulders makes me happy. Sunshine in my eyes can make me cry. So lovely. Sunshine almost always makes me high. If I had a tale that I could tell you, tell a tale sure to make you smile. If I had a wish that I could wish for you, I'd make a wish for sunshine.
Okay, welcome back. That's Sunshine on My Shoulders by John Denver from the album Poems, Prayers, and Promises. And that song was one of the favorite songs of Patrick John Dougherty, who we are dedicating the show to today. Patrick lived with Down syndrome, and he competed in Special Olympics for 50 years from the fall of 1975 to the spring of 2025. And our guest today is Katie McGee. She's with Special Olympics North Carolina. So, Katie, tell me about the coaching aspect of Special Olympics. Say someone is interested in becoming a coach with Special Olympics. What are the requirements and the training that's required?
Yeah, so we have on our website a page called Become a Coach, and it leads you through all the necessary requirements that you have to do. There are sessions that some are virtual, some are in person. Like there's a session called Coaching Special Olympics Athletes. That's kind of like a 101. And that session is actually led by Special Olympics athletes, because who better to teach our coaches how they want to be coached than Special Olympics athletes, right? So they have these sessions built in, and you can become different levels of a coach. So once you're a certified coach, you can move up from there if you keep completing the different requirements. So I highly encourage people to go to our website, sonc.net, and sign up to become a coach. I've heard from so many coaches that it's the best thing that the best decision they've ever made. And again, you are making those lifelong relationships with the athletes that you're coaching, which is one of the best parts of the job.
Does a person have to have experience, say if somebody wants to coach basketball, do they have to have experience as a basketball coach?
It would be better to have some sports experience in what you're coaching, to share your sports knowledge that you do have. If you want to get involved, but you don't have any sports background, we have tons of different volunteer opportunities where people can get involved, whether that's at a Special Olympics state level event or at a local level on a committee. There are a lot of opportunities there for you to still be involved and get to meet athletes and still be a part of the movement.
Do males and females participate in Special Olympics equal measure?
Across the board in Special Olympics International, the answer is yes. I believe in North Carolina we have slightly more males participating, but it's not a big gap there.
Let me ask you about some of the other programs that you offer. You touched on this one a little earlier, the health and wellness program. And I was wondering if you could go into a little more detail about that. It says on the website that research has shown that people with intellectual disabilities are consistently left out of the health systems that are ill-equipped to diagnose and treat them. So talk to me about that in relation to the health and wellness program.
Yeah, so people with intellectual disabilities, as you said, are not always a part of the conversation when doctors are going through medical school. And so sometimes they're ill-equipped to care for them, whether that's not knowing how to communicate with someone with an intellectual disability or not being familiar with their needs or different symptoms that could be presenting. There's a lot of different things involved there that make it so that our healthcare system as a whole right now does not support people with intellectual disabilities. And so Special Olympics is actually the largest health organization for people with intellectual disabilities. And we, like I said, we have health disciplines. We've got Strong Minds, Fit Feet, Fun Fitness, Healthy Hearing, Opening Eyes, Special Smiles. There's a bunch of different disciplines where athletes can get that care, that surface level care, that beginning level care, and identify some of those problems. And then we are also working to bring in doctors, nurse practitioners, nurses, all of that kind of thing, health officials, health professionals into the movement to better educate them on how to work with people with intellectual disabilities.
So why do you think it is that people with intellectual disabilities are kind of on the margins of the health system?
Historically, people with intellectual disabilities have been on the margins of society in general. And I think that as far as we've come, we still have a long way to go with making sure that we're being an inclusive society as a whole. And so I think lack of education, and that comes from people who maybe have been learning certain things throughout their decades of work, and just aren't familiar with it. And so we need to be educating people to bring this kind of information into the learning. It starts there, and once they're educated on it, then they can incorporate it into their practices.
So another one of the programs you have, which you also touched on earlier, is the Unified Sports Program. I'd like to know more about that and talk about some of the benefits for athletes who participate in that program, both those with intellectual disabilities and those who don't have that.
Yeah, Unified Sports takes place across the state and across the world, really. But here in North Carolina, we have sports that allow for unified participation. For example, volleyball or bowling or bocce, they can have a unified partner. So what that looks like is a person with a disability and a person without playing together equally on the field of play. And so there are rules in place to make sure that they're participating equally and making sure that there's a balance there. But it really brings people together, and we've seen that it helps kind of narrow those educational gaps and people not maybe knowing someone with an intellectual disability. That's a lot of the feedback that we get. Like, I've never met somebody with an intellectual disability before. I don't know how to talk to them. But through these programs like Unified Sports, they're learning, they're not so different from me. We're playing this sport together. We're getting to know each other, and it's really come a long way. We're also big in Unified Sports in schools. Interscholastic Unified Sports has come a long, long way, particularly with Unified Track. And we're able to meet these youths at a level where they're, you know, they're the change makers of our generations. And so if we can meet them where they are in the schools and let them meet people with intellectual disabilities at a younger age, studies have shown that it changes their perception for the rest of their life.
So does this take place at the public school level or at the college level?
Both. So at the public school level, specifically with high schools, we have a lot of unified track and field programs. Across North Carolina, we have unified track teams. And so they're able to participate with their classmates on the track. And so through that, they're able to go to like state level competitions. There's always a unified competition involved in these general state competitions or like regional competitions. So they're able to go to these higher level competitions with their classmates and compete together. And then in colleges, we have what we call unified clubs, and they're able to be in a club together, host programming, you know, whatever it may be, if it's sports or if it's a movie night, they can do what they'd like to really encourage people to come out to their club. And that's all a part of the Unified Champion Schools programming, which does bring children with and without intellectual disabilities together through sport or through inclusivity.
Okay, so that the Unified Champion Schools program is different in a way from the Unified Sports program?
They go hand in hand, but they are different programs. Unified Champion Schools is specifically a school-based program, whereas Unified Sports can happen in schools, but it can also happen outside all the way through, again, like 80 years old.
So is the sports program, is Unified Sports program, is that a fairly new program, or has it been around since the inception of Special Olympics?
It's not brand new, but it has not been around as long as Special Olympics has been around. When I started in 2015 as an intern, it was back then it was called Project Unify. Unified Champion Schools, it has developed from Project Unify, but that was where it was getting its bones and really becoming what it is today. And I think Unified Sports has been in states and in programming a little bit longer than that.
So one of the other programs I wanted to ask you about is the what's called the Law Enforcement Torch Run. What is that? How did it get started?
Yeah, so the Law Enforcement Torch Run is a grassroots fundraising movement where law enforcement officials, officers from globally across the world are involved with fundraising for Special Olympics. And they're our largest fundraiser, grassroots fundraiser. Here in North Carolina, the Law Enforcement Torch Run raises upwards of $2 million for us here in North Carolina. And that number is even bigger globally. So it started in 1981 in Wichita, Kansas. A chief named Chief LaMunyon had the idea to start the tradition of having a torch, a lit torch, and carrying the flame of hope for and running with it and bringing it into Kansas's summer games. And it's grown from there. And then he got other states on board with it. And it's grown significantly from there. And so they're very crucial to our movement and making sure that not only are they fundraising, but they're getting involved with people with intellectual disabilities and getting to know them. And some people in the Law Enforcement Torch Run go on to become unified partners or coaches in addition to taking on their responsibilities with the Law Enforcement Torch Run.
Any idea how many law enforcement personnel participate, say, throughout North Carolina?
I believe it's over 2,000 are participating in our annual relays. So each May we have torch run relays where they're carrying the flame of hope across the state of North Carolina. And it all culminates in our opening ceremony for the summer games where they carry the flame of hope into the stadium where we're hosting our opening ceremony and they light the cauldron, which signifies the opening of the games. So over 2,000 are participating in that, those torch run relays across the state. We have about 400 agencies in North Carolina participating.
And are they just local police departments or do kind of the State Bureau of Investigation or even federal law enforcement participate?
Yeah, we have police departments, sheriff's offices, the Department of Adult Corrections, NC State Highway Patrol. We've got the Fish and Wildlife Commission. Any law enforcement adjacent agency is welcome to participate.
So one of the other programs, you've got so many programs I wanted to ask you about.
Yeah, we do.
Which is great. I mean, it's a lot of opportunity for people to participate. What is the Athlete Leadership Program?
Right. So as I said, we have a goal to make sure that our organization is athlete-led, that we're incorporating athletes and their voices into every aspect of our organization. So in North Carolina, we have our athlete leadership program, and there are a lot of different roles that you can do through that program, one of which is an athlete ambassador. You can go out to events, like tabling events and maybe a fundraiser or something like that and show your support as an athlete and be a part of it that way. And then we have the role Global Messenger, which I spoke to earlier, where they're trained to be spokespeople for the organization. And that is a great leadership role. And then from there, they could be on the Athlete Leadership Council as well. And our Athlete Leadership Council, they are nominated and they can be athletes from across the state. And they give input. They meet regularly and then they give input to the president on issues going on within our organization.
Can you share, do you have any stories up your sleeve of someone who entered the athlete leadership program and ended up contributing and benefiting from participating?
Absolutely. So Annie Tain is an athlete from Orange County, Chapel Hill area. She is a skilled bocce player, tennis player, athletics. She does track and field. She's involved in a lot of different aspects. She got involved with Special Olympics several decades ago, and she became a global messenger over a decade or so ago. And from being a global messenger, she one has become an incredible speaker. She's very, very good at giving speeches and writing her own speeches. She's one of the athletes that I'm a speech coach for, and I work with her on writing those speeches. And she's become very good at writing her own and giving her own input. And she has been on the athlete council. She's rotated off the athlete council, gotten nominated to be on it again several times. So she's a very exceptional athlete leader. We can see that because now she is actually a part of our board of directors, and she holds the role of vice president or vice chair of our board of directors. She has made a huge impact on our organization as a leader, and giving her feedback to the organization and making sure that she's showing up to things and making sure people hear her voice and know that she's involved, and she makes sure she goes out in public and talks about Special Olympics to other people so that they can get involved. She's a very well-rounded athlete leader.
That's Katie McGee. She's the Senior Director of Marketing and Communications with Special Olympics North Carolina, and she's been with Special Olympics North Carolina since 2016. And you're listening to A Better World at 103.7 WPVM in Asheville, North Carolina. And we're streaming live at WPVMFM.org. Heart and soul, joy and pride, symbols of our courage. We cannot hide. Let me win. If I cannot win, let thee be brave and the attempt. Let me win. If I cannot win, let me be brave in the attempt. Time is now that we help each other celebrate our purpose. Okay, that's Charlie O'Court singing Let Me Win. And he wrote that song in honor of the Special Olympics in Canada in 2018.
Olympians have thrilled us on the playing fields of the world. You have taught us that what matters is not power or politics, weapons or wealth. What truly counts is the courageous spirit and the generous heart. Like the heart of the mother whose daughter is special, she walked with her child 16 miles each week from her village to the coach who taught her daughter how to run. This mother is in the stadium tonight, and tomorrow, with the world watching, she will see her daughter race in the 200-meter dash. When our hearts are touched and when they are opened, then there is a world on fire. As the philosopher wrote, after conquering the winds and the waves, the tides and gravity, we shall harness for God the energies of love. And then, for the second time in the history of the world, man will discover fire. Good luck, Special Olympians.
Those are the concluding remarks from Eunice Kennedy Shriver's opening speech at the 1987 Special Olympics World Summer Games. Today, our guest is Katie McGee, Senior Director of Marketing and Communications for the Special Olympics in North Carolina. So, Katie, I would imagine volunteers are a big part of your organization, as it usually is with all nonprofits. Tell me how someone might get started and to be a volunteer and what sorts of things they can get involved with, in addition to coaching.
That is an understatement. Volunteers are the heartbeat of our organization. We do what we do because volunteers are a part of it. So if somebody is looking to get involved, again, our website is the first place I'd direct somebody to, sonc.net. And we have a Become a Volunteer page where they can learn about different opportunities that are coming up, find opportunities near them. Or if they're in the Raleigh area, they can learn about stuff that's coming up or going on year round. But we have stuff happening across the state all the time, and they can learn about how to get involved locally that way.
Where does Special Olympics get funding?
Our funding comes from all over, so we do rely on individual donors giving to our movement. We have sponsors that are a huge part of our movement and that make sure that we're able to provide the programming that we do, which is huge. And then we have grants as well. And then we have funding that comes from the CDC as well as the Department of Education.
Department of Education brings up what's happening right now on the federal government. Is that, do you see any potential effects on Special Olympics?
There could be potential effects. As of right now, they're pretty confident that it will be okay, but that's always a question of whether it will work out the way we hope.
So talk about, if you can, how Special Olympics has changed you as a person over the years.
Yeah, I think that Special Olympics has changed me into a much more patient person. I've learned a lot about how I communicate and how I'm able to meet people where they are instead of expecting maybe them to meet me at my place. I think it's given me a lot of perspective on what people are capable of and never doubting somebody. And I think that is a huge piece of being involved with Special Olympics is recognizing that these athletes are so able if just given the chance.
How can people find out more about Special Olympics and how they can get involved?
Here in North Carolina, you can visit our website, sonc.net, and get involved through one of our, there's tons of programs. There's so many ways to get involved. So there's definitely an opportunity for everybody. If you're not in North Carolina, I recommend visiting your state's website. And if you just type in Special Olympics and then your state, it should pop up pretty quickly and find a way to get involved that way.
Was there any kind of administrative link between the state organizations and the national or international organization?
Yeah, we're overseen by the international organization. All of our rules, our sports and competition rules, come from the international organization. So we are adhering to their policies and such.
So final question, any final thoughts you'd like to share?
I would really like to encourage people to get involved with Special Olympics. I think it like I've said, it can change your life. I don't mean to sound dramatic when I say that, but I do think that it can bring something new to every person that gets involved.
Okay, on that note, I want to thank Katie McGee. She's the Senior Director of Marketing and Communications with Special Olympics in North Carolina. Katie, thank you so much for being on the show, and thank you for all the good work you do with Special Olympics. All the best to you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to A Better World at 103.7 WPVM in Asheville, North Carolina, and we've been streaming live at WPVMFM.org. And our show today was dedicated to our friend Patrick Dougherty, who competed in the Special Olympics for 50 years. Thank you, Patrick, for the dedication and the commitment to your sport and to the Special Olympics. And thanks to all the Special Olympians who help make this world a better and more enjoyable place. This is McNair Ezard. Thank you for joining us, and hopefully we'll see you next time on A Better World. And we're going out today with the song Reach Up, performed by Orr, and it debuted at the 2015 Special Olympics Summer World Games.
Welcome to the camp, I guess you all know why we're here. My name is Tommy, and I became aware this year. If you want to follow me, you've got to play pinball. And put in your earplugs, put on your eye shades, you know where to put the caulk. Hey, you getting drunk? So sorry, I've got you sussed. Hey, you smoking Mother Nature? This is a bust. Hey, hung up old me.
Mr. Normal. Don't try to gain my trust, 'cause you ain't gonna follow me any of those ways, although you think you must. Take it, gonna break it, gonna shake it, let's forget it, better still.